Tonight on In the Neighborhood, WIDE brings you part one of a joint listening session on the city operating and capital budgets with Alders Fair and Cheeks, held September 8th at the Sequoia Branch Library.
Thanks for coming out on this. Hopefully it's one of our last gorgeous nights of summer, but I appreciate you being here. We're going to get started in 5 seconds or so. Yeah, sure. Welcome to the 10th District, mostly residents. So my name is Maurice Cheeks, and this is my good friend, Alderman Fair. I am very, very excited to be hosting a joint public listening session with Alder Fair, and I've been working on several projects together. This is the first of these that we're doing, and so he has volunteered to allow me to hit all the bumps possible.
Yeah.
And he'll do the one that we're doing next week, probably, but obviously he'll jump in frequently.
Yep.
So one of the things that occurs to me as I start talking about a listening session is there's not uniform understanding of what that means, right? Who's doing the listening is always the question. So to be sure, I think it's essential for us to be doing listening as public servants, right? So we're happy to answer questions. We'll have plenty of time for that. Matt and I have had the opportunity to work together on some really exciting projects, and sometimes, you know, our service comes in the form of talking and leading, and sometimes it comes in the service of sitting and listening. And so today we're going to walk you through a little bit of an overview of what the capital budget, of what the city's budget is. We're going to do that today with the help of our amazing, well, today's event is going to happen with the help of three amazing city staffers. Heather Allen from the council office. She has done a ton of work over the past year to, over the past month, 3 years since I've been on the council to bolster the service of the council. When you see us doing things like announcing big initiatives on proactively working to reduce gun violence, a lot of that comes from Heather's amazing policy research. And so thanks for all your help on that. And then when you see all of the super detailed and diligent and transparent work on the city budget, that's coming from our finance department. Laura and Dave are both going to speak to us today, and they're going to lead us through a little bit of building an understanding of the budget. But I'll start, actually, if you want to just give a, or I can do that. Just want to give a quick clarification of what the city's budget is. So the city budget happens in two forms. There's a capital budget and an operating budget. You want to explain what the difference between
those
are?
I mean, I like to think of it as capital is doing things, or making buildings and stuff. It's things you put your hands on, right? And operating is the day-to-day of doing things. Right, so capital budget are the big investments that you drive on, you play at, you read at, right? Libraries and streets and neighborhood centers and public markets, perhaps, and those kind of things. Primary, like that says up there, that's done with borrowing, mainly city obligation borrowing, but some other funds as well that Dave and Laura will talk about later. And the operating budget are almost primarily from our your taxes and supported by the levy, and a lot of that goes to personnel costs, and it's people, it's programs, it's, you know, it's pickup, it's the police officers, it's the firefighters, it's the staff that work for us, so diligently every day.
Yep, so that's exactly right. As it relates to these budgets are being formed actually all of the time. The finance department doesn't only get busy at budget season, they get busy at the start of the year. And so you'll see in January and March, they're already, in fact, probably in December for that matter, they already start putting their hats on about how do we start to think about the budget for this upcoming year. They've been doing that work for the better part of the year, starting in the second quarter of the year, so starting in April. They're working closely with the executive branch of the city government. They start working closely with the mayor, and they really spend all of the spring and summer on preparing the budget, both with the mayor and also with department heads. And so after they've worked on that for the better part of the year, we now are in the time period where there's a clear opportunity for public engagement, right? So now the capital budget gets introduced. It'll be 30 days from now, approximately, that the operating budget gets made public. Both of those are proposed budgets from the executive branch. The mayor offers his budget, and it's the council's responsibility. This is sort of like the most exciting time of year for the city council. Like, this is our big duty, frankly, is to pass a budget. So from our perspective, I don't think it's reasonable for us to plan to do that without listening. You know, we do listen to our constituents in a lot of different manners, but as Matt and I have started doing more and more work together, we thought we should do something where we open the doors and allow people to come. And we've actually heard from a lot of people that that they're excited about these, and so I'm glad that you guys came to our first one. We'll have another one next week, so if it goes poorly, or if it goes well, I'll tell your friends. Then we'll be doing another one next week at Matt's district.
Yeah, Matt and Neighbors Center.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to bring finance up to do the next few slides. You know, I think it's really important to understand sort of where your money comes from and how it gets spent. This is, they have a bunch of slides, but this is one of my favorite ones. But I'll just turn it over and let you guys talk a little bit about property taxes, and I'll jump in again in a little few minutes.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to be here talk to you a little bit about the city budget. So obviously, money coming in, where does it come from? Well, most of it comes from the property tax. And we're reliant on the property tax. It's really set by state law. We don't really have too many other options on where those dollars come from. The next largest source is state aid, and primarily what we call shared revenue, as well as transportation aid. We also get some room tax that we use in the city budget outside of what's spent on tourism-related purposes. We also collect dollars from city licenses, like bartender licenses, liquor licenses. We levy fines, we have charges. For example, we have an ambulance fee that we charge if you're conveyed to the hospital to help defray that cost. And payments in lieu of taxes, we get payments from our utilities, most notably the water utility. It is a business operation. It is exempt from property taxes, so it makes a payment in lieu of those taxes.
By the way, anytime there's questions,
we jump in.
Whether we're speaking Dave, Larry, Flora, anyway.
Yep. So we've spent a lot of time on what the tax levy is, and this just gives you a sense of what those levy increases have been on a percentage basis over the last 15 years compared to the average over that time. The average increase has been about 4.4%, and since 2002, or 2010, I should say, that rate of increase has been below that average, and in some cases quite a bit below. That's a combination of the effect of the recession that we've been emerging from over the last couple of years, as well as strict limits by the state on how much tax levies can increase each year. We also look at overall property taxes and try to express them as an amount on an average value home. And that average value home right now is around $250,000in value. It's probably not what anybody's specific house is, but that's the average. And you can see again how that's varied. That increase on average has been about 3.5% per year. And again, over the last roughly 4 years, it's been quite a bit below that average again, as we've seen really a fall in value as we were in the recession and we started to recover value over the last couple of years. So we looked at how the money comes in, talked about the property tax, how does the money go out the door. The pie chart on the left-hand side gives you sort of the functional areas. About 25% is what we call general government. That's going to be the things like the finance department, information technology, all of the things that we do to sort of help keep the public services going.
The biggest share of the budget is public safety, so that'll be the police department and the fire department, as well as all those two departments. Public health, which is a joint arrangement with Dane County, that's about 2% of the budget. Public works, which is going to be primarily snow plowing, refuse collection, our transit system, the subsidy we provide for that, about 12%. Culture, recreation, education, that's going to be things like the parks division, and then conservation and development is our economic development activities, community services, and then transit system, the subsidy there is about 4%. When we look at it in terms of the type of spending, about half of it, about almost a little over 70% of the budget is really paying for people. The cost of our police officers, our firefighters, our library staff, transit drivers, snowplow, and vehicle operators, and so on. About 16% is a combination of purchase services and supplies, and then about 13% is through debt, repaying our debt over time.
Quick question.
Yeah.
70%, is that the normal percentage for a city our size? Or?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when you look at sort of the operating, we're looking at the operating budget right now. So when you look at the operations of a municipality, that's primarily where the dollars are going. If you were to look at, say, the water utility, which is a combination of capital investment in plant as well as the people that do it, you're going to have a much higher percentage for those capital expenditures. But this is pretty difficult.
When you talk about debt financing, is that for like when you put the public market, build the public market, you do the John Miller?
Right.
Is that what you're talking about?
Right. So we issue debt to pay for capital expenditures. So those are going to be things like building this library, for example, reconstructing a street like University Avenue. Building the public market or a new police district station. So pretty much everything that the city does that results in a tangible asset, like this building or a road or something else, we issue debt for, and then we repay that debt typically over 10 years span of time. And that's how much of that share of our general fund budget is what's being paid to service that debt.
What kind of rates do you as the city get?
Sure, that's a really good question. We're so we have the highest rating we can get on our debt, the AAA rating, and that's because of the excellent job that the mayor and the council do in managing the finances. It reflects the strength of our economy, you know, the very strong local economy, you know, the state government, the university, our strong biotech sector. It also reflects the fact that we repay our debt quickly. So that the 10-year debt that we use is uncommon among government. Typically, you'll see 20-year debt in most communities in the state and around the country. So we're aggressive in repaying our debt. And we have a relatively strong fund balance. We have about 15% of our revenues, in effect, set aside as a share of our overall expenditures. And that's another sign of strength. You put that all together with AAA bond rating. So our rates right now, which are historically low, are around 1.5% to 2%. So it's a very good, very low interest rate environment right now.
Yes, sir. How do you pay that back outside of a 15%? Do you offer bonds? Or do you offer other options to raise money to help pay off that debt?
Right, so we will issue what we call promissory notes. That's what a 10-year instrument is. So we will sell that in financial markets. Investors will purchase them, and we always put it out to a competitive bid. So we'll put it out into the market, and that's how we get the lowest possible interest rate on our debt, which has been extremely competitive over the last year. Among the lowest rates you can get because we're a AAA rated issuer and we're seen as a very safe investment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
offer other ways to fundraise? Like, I know that some things are hard to raise money for. Like, you know, what the Monona Terrace does, the Humane Society, do they sell bricks? The city seems to have some kind of law that prevents them from raising money to help pay for things. I was just thinking.
So what we also fund, many capital projects with a combination of both city debt, for example. When we talk about road projects, we are getting money from the federal government, the state government, county government, on those roads that might be, for example, County Highway M, or University Avenue, which is designated a state or county highway. So we get multiple sources of that. When we look at a library like Sequoia, for example, the Friends Group did a tremendous job of raising money to help pay for this building. And we saw that with the Central Library as well, where the Library Foundation, it was roughly a $30 million project, the Library Foundation contributed over $8 million towards the construction of that building. You're right, there were, with Monona Terrace, there was some element of fundraising associated with that. There are other revenue sources that we tap into to help pay for capital projects, yes.
Thank you.
I'm having a hard time. Are you saying you really only pay 1.5% borrow the money for the market we're talking about?
Yep, on our general obligation debt. So we do 10-year notes, and the average of the interest rate per year when we look at everything is about 1.5 to 2%.
That's pretty good.
Yep. Still have to pay back the principal. So one way to kind of look at how the city operations have grown over time is to look at the rate of growth in positions, since they represent a big share of our general fund budget. And if you look since 1999, so roughly a 16-year period, we've seen that overall positions have grown about 18%. And if you look at the growth in the city's population over that same span of time, it's 18%. So overall, we've seen a growth in operations that's relatively consistent with the city population. However, that growth has been uneven and has been focused in arguably priority areas, with much of that growth occurring in public safety, police and fire. This is the total number. It's gone up about 130 positions for the police department, about 90 positions for the fire department. That rate of growth on a percentage basis compared to that 18% is about 30%. So police and fire have grown about 30%. Overall, the average has been 18%. So the rest of the city government has grown much more slowly than that 18%. That reflects the impact of technology and other measures to try to streamline how we do things in city government. We've seen some growth in the transit utility. Again, that rate of growth on a percentage basis is less than 18%, it's about 11%. Engineering's growing faster. Some of those areas of engineering have been particularly affected by changes in federal law regarding stormwater requirements. And we, since 1999, we've added a stormwater fee, and that's helped fund a lot of those activities to help manage the pollutants that go into our lakes and
What's that one on the far right that's dropping most? I can't read it.
It's housing operations. So we had some of that's been contracted out. Some of it we've just again, streamlined how we're doing. Right next to that, golf courses. We used to have ice arenas. We don't have ice arenas anymore. Fleet, assessor, planning, administrative, civil rights, municipal court. A lot of these are the internal programs that the city have either shrunk slightly or grown much more slowly than the overall growth. So, big rate of growth has been in public safety areas. If you want to speak to this one, but this just gives a sense of another way to look at the growth in the operating budget by city agency. These are just the total dollars from 2000. With those upper line being police and fire, and then everything else has been relatively flat. So that, again, reinforces the previous two slides that the priority areas in the operating budget have really been public safety and a focus of both positions and the associated dollars to pay for those positions in those areas. And this just gives you a trend of the expenditure growth, again, over the last 15 years. And the average growth in expenditures has been about 4% per year. And we've been pretty much below that average since about 2010. Again, that reflects those state mandated levy limits I was talking about, as well as other constraints on the overall budget.
You're talking here about the operating budget.
This is the operating budget, right.
Yep.
Of which debt service is a portion. I just wanted to touch briefly on, and I kind of touched on this in the beginning, when we look at budgeting in the state, kind of unique compared to the rest of the country, where when we look at large communities or larger communities like Madison, most places in the rest of the country have other revenue sources besides the tax levy, which could include sales tax or gas taxes in some communities around the country. So we're very reliant on the property tax levy. And then the state very much controls what can be done with the levy. We can only grow the levy by what we call net new construction. So the value of new construction in the city as in proportion to the overall value in the city. And that rate of growth has ranged from less than 1% over the last 5 years to where it is right now, a little over 2%. So it really constrains how much we can do with the levy. Now, debt service, so paying, repaying our debt or the bond or notes that we issue, that is excluded from the levy. We also have a second limit, which is called expenditure restraint. And that is focused on our overall spending rather than just the property taxes, revenues coming in. And that can grow at roughly the rate of inflation plus some portion of that net new construction. And if we stay below that rate of growth, we get a $6.5 million payment from the state. And we've been getting that payment for 25 years. And so that's another factor. We haven't really seen that be an issue over the last few years because of the impact of the property tax limits. We've been able to stay below that amount. That's another constraint we face.
So is this political decision?
I'm sorry?
Is this driven by politics? Or was this the same during the Doyle administration?
This has been, I'll try to keep my overall explanation, but the state and the state legislature and governors, and say multiple governors, have been focused on property taxes for decades. And I think since the 1970s, the way that the state tried to address all of this is to say, okay, we're going to only allow you to levy property taxes at the local level pretty much, and then we'll share the state revenues that we collect from sales taxes and income taxes. Well, that really pretty much ended for local governments and municipalities in the early 1990s when the state went to pay two-thirds of school costs. And they pretty much took all of its income and sales tax revenues and devoted it, property tax relief via school district levies. And so more recently, I think the policymakers have tended to move away from using state aid and state revenue to hold down property taxes, and instead have moved to these tough revenue limits or tough levy limits on local governments. So I think the most recent, our current governor, his focus was on a combination of strict levy limits and then strict spending controls via changes in collective bargaining law and things like that. So you can call it politics, you can call it policy making. Property taxes have been an issue for many, many years, and what we have is sort of the latest incarnation of that in the form of collective bargaining changes, state aid cuts, and these strict property tax. And speaking of state aid, and this just amplifies what I just said, what we've seen since the 80s is pretty much flat state aid or reductions in state aid to municipalities through shared revenue and expenditure restraint, which is called PERP shortly. If that amount of aid had grown at the rate of inflation, we would be getting from the state roughly $40 million more than what we're getting right now. And so we have to levy for that, or not spend as much, to make up that difference. Now, a lot of that difference that you see there has been delivered to local taxpayers through state, through school aids, and holding down or reducing the levy for schools. All right, now we'll switch to the capital budget.
All right, so earlier this week, the mayor's executive capital budget came out for the upcoming year. And when we look at capital, we really look at it in two different ways. We look at what are we formally committing and appropriating for the next year, so for 2017, and then what are we planning to do in the 5 years beyond that? And that just helps us to make a plan of where we're going to invest our money for these big projects. So in the first chart over here to the left, you see the budget for 2017. These are the capital projects that we're going to undergo next year. So the total budget is $329 million. And you can see that that's broken down between the geo debt that Dave mentioned. That's what will get repaid through future years of the property tax. And then there's $177 million that's in other funding. So big piece of that is revenue bonds. That's the work of our water utility, sewer utility, but there's other things there like reserves from our various utilities, funding from impact fees for parks and engineering projects, as well as any tax increment proceeds that we're using cash within our TIF districts. So on that chart there, the green bars or the green circles represent new money that we're authorizing in 17, and the yellow portion represents funding for projects that are underway that are going to keep going next year. So if you look then over to the right, you can see what the plan looks like in the coming years. So over the 6 years of the 2017 executive CIP, $1.2 billion will be invested in Madison's infrastructure. And really what has been the problem in recent years with Madison's capital budget is that a lot of the projects have been stacked up front. So we've had a lot of capital spending planned in the first couple years of the capital budget, which places a lot of pressure on getting things done, but then also how that manifests itself in debt for the property tax levy.
Yeah, close on that.
So, how are we spending this money? So you can see, again, this is just looking at 2017. So the top pie chart there is showing how we're funding this $329 million budget. You can see 46% of it is coming from PO borrowing. We have 20% that's made up of reserves, applied miscellaneous other funding sources. Revenue bonds, that's mainly in our sewer and water utilities, that's 10%. Tax increment financing, that's in our various TIF districts, 15%. And then our work in parks and engineering from development fees is 4%. And as I mentioned, 56% of the funding associated with the 17 budget is related to things that are already underway, already under construction, will be continuing into 17. If you look at the second pie chart, you can see how we're spending that money. And no surprise, the vast majority of our capital budget is dedicated to public works. So the streets and the utilities that we maintain, parks, our traffic infrastructure, the buses and vehicles that we buy for various city departments. The next biggest portion is community and economic development, and those are things like the affordable housing program, where we're working with developers to construct affordable housing units. That also encompasses a lot of the work that is happening within our tax increment districts.
Can I ask you, when you go back, when you say 56% is continuing projects, give me some idea of which ones that were just, give me an idea of like one, something that's been around, still around, and stay around? And
yeah, so this is largely related to scheduling of things, and you know, we may have anticipated that construction would get underway right away in 16, and perhaps the planning and design of a project took a little bit longer, and so we're going to see that we might not go out to bid or spend money the full money on the contract until 17. There's so many, I'm blanking. One example, there's funds in the parks division budget for some work at Garber in relation to the new parks development that's happening there. Yeah, Penn Park is another example. These were big projects at our parks for, you know, various renovation or, you know, new construction in the parks, that they had thought the planning process was going to go on a different schedule than it actually wound up going.
Mark, would we consider, as proposed, Midtown?
There is reauthorized funding for Midtown to fund the design for the new facility.
What happens to the funds that were allocated in the capital budget last year, for example, for Midtown, and nothing has happened other than design of the building? Do those funds go back into the pot? Do they stay in the capital budget? Are they appropriated to other things in the new budget? Does it disappear? Because we hear that when a project is funded in 1 year, that if it's not constructed for 4 years out, the cost of that project obviously goes up because of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So I just need to have a handle on how the city budgets for those things when action doesn't actually take place in terms of something that was approved in a previous capital budget.
So with a construction of a building or a new asset, there's generally a timeline of various phases that we go through when building that new asset. So if we were going to take a police station as an example, the lead up to the project is the planning and design phase, in which city staff is engaging architects to really figure out what the facility should look like in order to meet the end needs. And then after that process plays itself out, that's when the construction takes place. And that the construction schedule really varies based off the complexity of the project. So what will happen is, you know, we will budget the funds for the project. We try to show them based off of how we think the spending is going to happen. So if we think that it's going to cost $1 million in planning and getting ready for a big project, and then we think that the construction of the project is going to be maybe $10 million over 2 years, we would show, you know, $1 million in the first year for the planning, 10 in year two, and 10 in year three. Now, what happens with those out years is every year when we go to build the budget, we'll refine assumptions based off of updated schedules for projects. Now, just keep in mind that when we're appropriating funds for the projects, those are appropriations. We've not borrowed cash dedicated to that specific project. We borrow once a year, and that is based off of what has happened. So the agencies continue to keep their appropriations for their projects. That's part of what's making up that 56%, unless it's explicitly canceled or unless we've adjusted the timetable for the project. Okay. So here's just a breakdown of where some of that $329 million is going in the 17 budget. So we like to talk about projects in these four themes: investments in livability, equity, affordability, and jobs. So in terms of livability, the proposed budget invests $8 million in ped bike projects. There's $11 million in various parks projects that are planned for 2017. Another $30 million for roads projects that are dedicated mainly to neighborhood roads or roads around the periphery. In terms of equity, there's $2 million for a neighborhood center, $31 million over the life of the CIP dedicated to affordable housing, $10 million for library facilities, particularly the Penny Branch. In regards to affordability, we're really trying to be mindful of, as we pay for all this stuff, as we go out and borrow for it, the taxpayers are going to have to pay it back. And so the mayor's budget does represent some tough decisions, and there's a $20 million reduction from agency customers.
Well, you mentioned $31 million over the next 5 years mm-hmm. for affordable housing. What is it in next year's budget for?
Four and a half.
Thank you.
We will also seek to use, Dave mentioned that we rapidly retire our debt in 10 years, but we're going to be using some long-term debt for these big assets that we're building, like the Madison Municipal Building that will last much longer than 10 years. That'll kind of lessen the burden of that particular project on the operating budget. In terms of jobs, there's funding for the public market. There's $50 million for the County Highway M reconstruction that will help connect people to an employment hub. The great thing there is that the city's portion of that budget is only a small portion. Much of the $50 million is coming in from federal, state, and county resources. And then the budget also includes $31 million in anticipation to begin implementing a bus rapid transit investment.
Could you explain that? Bus rapid?
Bus rapid transit will be a new service provided by Madison Metro that is geared towards moving people along the routes at a quicker timetable than what they go now.
How do you do that? I mean, you're still red lights.
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe like dedicated lanes.
Slant corridors.
Right. So.
Oh, Gary can explain.
Is it just taking everybody to Epic?
No.
No.
No. Okay. Sadly, no.
You mentioned federal funds, right? Mm-hmm. Are those, can the state touch those, or those federal funds are for the city? You can rely on that number when you're doing the claim.
Much of the federal money comes through the state, and then it is, but much of it is also determined by local metropolitan planning organizations. So there's one for Madison, and the city is sort of the major player in that organization. So we do have some interaction with the state, and we have to have the projects ready to go, but there's not too much sort of siphoning off, right, like that. We just have to have projects ready to go, though. So County Highway M is a good example of a project that's ready to go, so the city has to put its money in order to be sure that the state and the federal dollars are going to be applied to that project.
That is all that we have for that portion.
I'm still, my mind just can't comprehend where the transit bus. I mean, it seems to me, how can you go any faster than the way you have? Are we talking like above a sky train or something?
No.
There was a study done on this aspect of transit service, and it's a number of things. It's fewer stops. It is on major roads where we have already a great deal of traffic. It is a signal prioritization where the bus can actually turn a signal from red to green. Could be dedicated lanes and the bus can continue on where automobile traffic can be stopped. And the thought behind it, frankly, is that, in my mind, it taps a new market of ridership. Those people that, but for the fact that they can drive faster than they can take the bus, they have a mechanism that negates that there's either ethically or environmentally conscious people that would take the bus if they could. So I mean, there's been some thought, and there's obviously questions. What does it do to the existing routes on those roads, and maybe there'll be some shifting ridership there where we don't need as many buses on a predetermined route, that rapid transit will grow so fast that it will grow the system, which is already a great system in the country. But I advise.
It occurs to me that, Gary, you could leave as much of this as you want.
You're doing a great job.
Finance works really hard on this all year, presents it to the mayor, and then the press digs into it. And that's typically how you guys end up seeing it, right? And frankly, that's they get to it really quick, so we end up reading it in the headlines within hours of the same moment that we get it. And so it's presented in ways like this, where you know, your first impressions, you don't get to see the highlights of all the awesome things that staff wants to highlight, the mayor's office wants to highlight. You end up saying, whoa, wait a second, you know, we're proposing major cuts to infrastructure that we were sort of planning, Monroe Street and Midtown Station and other things that seem important to us, that the council has demonstrated support for over and over, and the neighbors have been largely supportive of. And so while we took a bit of time to sort of set the stage and bring up the speed, I think really what we want to do is acknowledge that different people have different priorities for what they think is most important in their city. And this is the important work of local government, is making those decisions collectively, transparently, collaboratively, and ultimately, best to do that on your behalf. So we don't want to do that without your input. This is, as we said before, this is the first of several of these that we're going to have, both on the capital budget, but also on the operating budget. We're going to do something that's a little unusual for government. We're going to get up and like interact with each other a little bit. Heather's going to lead us on in a quick exercise where we literally want to know where you stand on some of these big important issues, and we'll use that as a starting point for some dialogue. So I can quickly use this if you want.
Okay. Great. So first up, if you're comfortable, is please stand up. First question is, do you have hope for your future, for our future and our children's future here in Madison? And if you agree with that statement, please move to this side of the room. And if you disagree with that statement, please move to this side of the room. And if you're neutral, you can stand straight smack in the middle.
I'm watching. I'm not sure how participating.
Okay, so staff followers have decided not to participate. Okay, so this is a great sign. I think folks are feeling very optimistic. Can I just get one or two people who want to say why they feel optimistic about the future for our kids and our families in Madison? Are there any hands?
Somebody wants to say.
I just think there's a lot of very good things happening in our city. Whether we're talking scientifically or educationally or even just fun things, just a little bit of
that's fantastic. Thank you. Is anyone else on the way in? So lots of fun things, education and science in our city. That's great.
The reason I'm in the middle, I guess I have concern that there's so many things that are out of our control that I'd love to be hopeful, but other things that react to our aspirations, the last several years, I don't have reason for a lot of hope. I hope I'm wrong, but that's why I'm doing.
Okay.
Are you going to ask the same question about our state?
No. We're almost done with the city can control
right now.
All right. Okay, so next question. Is the city doing an adequate job ensuring safe neighborhoods? If you agree, come to this wall. If you disagree, go to that wall.
And
if you're neutral, line up right down here.
Get a crowd.
Do you want to go kind of neutral, like leaning?
Yeah, you can go anywhere on the spectrum. Okay, would anyone like to say what they feel neutral about whether or not the city's doing enough to ensure?
Well, I'll start because through your emails and all that, we know at night there's a lot going on,
mm-hmm.
And so, it's about neighborhood watch. We wouldn't know what's happening, but we do know what's happening. And I'm not sure the city, I don't know what the city can do about it. I know the police are doing the best what they can, but it's just that feeling that there are people around your house at night going through your cars, stealing cars. So I think that's part of the feeling of not quite as safe as I'd like to be in the neighborhood.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. not quite as safe as you'd like to be in, but you seem to feel very comfortable. Would you like to say
why? Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, I feel pretty safe. Probably, I would cite as evidence the neighborhood watch itself also. There are plenty of reports of break-ins and property theft and this kind of crimes, but my understanding is that the city has made officers available to us and that they have heard us and that we haven't had any trouble getting in touch with them or getting them to, you know, hey, can you patrol this street a little extra? Or, you know, and it's been a two-way street. We also have been able to express our voice and advocate for the Midtown Police Station. So I think I think there's something really healthy going on there. And I really appreciate that we're kept informed about the thefts such as they are, or whatever crimes are happening in Madison, which I'm sure I know.
The other thing, I agree, I mean, I'd be appreciative. Yeah. But guns, constantly now guns at the beach, you know, because there's a gun report almost every day.
Right.
You know, anywhere you go, the bar that you go to all the time, O'Grady's, you know, there's a murder. I mean, it's that sense of, it's true of bigger cities, obviously, but it's just that it seems to be more and more and more gun threats and gun concerns.
I think if you phrased it, is the police department doing that job, it might be different than your city, because there's a difference, a perception. The city of Madison seems to have an adversarial relationship with the police, and they are not as receptive to ideas or suggestions to improve safe neighborhoods. Mayor Soglin, very poor communicator with me, the Neighborhood Watch Chair, and I've offered ideas to help the city grow in the Neighborhood Watch, and our mayor doesn't seem to be interested in going in that direction. So I think if you phrased it differently, you could probably get a different reaction. Because I think the police are doing the best job they can under the circumstances, but the city, there's room for improvement there.
Well, that's good to know. And if I may just make a plug, the council has just created a new subcommittee to hear what the community thinks on issues related to police and safety. So that meeting is actually about a week from now, Wednesday, September 14th at 7 p.m. And I think ideas like that will be.
But I understand that that subcommittee may be biased against the police. So I don't know if you're going to get a very...
Well, I think...
We should probably have a side conversation about that. That committee is made up of others. And so it's made up of the people who are responsible for making those decisions on behalf of the city about safety. But I think we can keep going to the next question.
Okay. We can talk about
We've got plenty of time for more Q&A, so we can get into more of that.
Okay, question number three. Question for Gary. Is it convenient to get around Madison? If you agree with that statement, please stay on the side of the room. And if you disagree, more people feeling neutral.
Yeah. If you could think about it any mode that you use.
Any mode.
Yep.
My mode or whatever.
Foot, bus, bike, car, hoverboard, whatever.
Different answers for each one.
Right.
Bus, I love a bus, but car could be a problem, especially in the adult room.
Right.
And you have to react to it.
Our city better not grow anymore because that adult line is already full.
Okay. Any other comments on transportation or getting around?
Yeah, I have a comment.
Sure.
I wish they sort of think about where they're going to do all the repairs and road construction and talk about it ahead of time instead of find that, you know, one street going this way is being torn up at the same time that it's like, now for
yeah,
some
the
of us,
city,
it's
the
tough.
County, and the state don't talk to one another in terms of transportation projects. They seem to be at loggerheads with one another, and it's tough for us as citizens to get around sometimes.
This is nitpicking, but I don't know if we got the market on the speed bumps and the islands and things like that. It's like some engineering firm got in. I'm sure that somebody from some engineer thought this is great, but to me, they're everywhere.
But somebody took two of them out on the road and I was in the day, and so I went, I went clunk twice.
No, it doesn't stop me from going that same way. It just, I slowed down. It just, it seemed like somebody was making money on speed bumps every
The city controls those ourselves.
What?
We don't have a consultant that does that, or a contractor. We just do that ourselves.
No, you? That's your idea.
It wasn't my idea at all. There's a lot of them in my
head. No, I They just seem to be popping up everywhere.
The first ones are mine, so I'll take them.
Well, I'm going to take some of them are good, but you have every, when you have every street has them on, then it becomes a little bit wrong.
You wonder what the criteria is.
Yeah, there you go.
From my perspective, if someone was kind of in the early days of the speed bumps, they were somewhat, not gaudy, but they were fairly, you know, the accidents, amount of traffic, speeding data, all that sort of thing. I don't know what you're doing. It's still the same case.
Is 70% of the neighborhood has to, you know, sign up.
Right, there's that, but there are some streets that it strikes me that there can't be possibly that much traffic on there. There's a perception that there's a lot of traffic. Whenever you build a big building, like the folks on Monroe Street with the one down in the corner of Knickerbocker and Monroe, and they were all up in the air about all this traffic that come through the neighborhood. But when you, you took how much traffic would actually be there and divided by the time of day, it was like two or three cars an hour or more.
Yeah.
It was insignificant.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering on some of the streets that seem insignificant to me, that maybe there's just a pool of money that's kind of, you know, now it's everybody could probably, every street, you know, you've gone the major ones that needed that kind of protection.
Yeah.
Now you're down to a different level, and I just don't know if you guys are re-examining that program or not.
It's a good, no, it's a good thought. We, again, of course, the answer we have is this later, but it's a good thought to look at that program, because I've been somewhat frustrated with it. So.
I'm proud to say, I don't think I've approved any students. It's only been 3 years, though.
Yeah.
We've heard that housing affordability is a big concern for many people in Madison. So our question to you is there anything the city can do to make housing more affordable? If you agree with that statement, you can do that side of the room. If you disagree, the city is doing everything it can to make housing affordable.
Well, everybody has a house. Everybody stays somewhere.
There's a variety of ways that the city impacts housing.
I mean, I don't know what the city can do, because the housing, sales of housing is $20,000 or $30,000 over, you know, reassessed value. You get five offers on the first day. My son's a teacher. There was no way he's going to be able to buy a house in Mass. It's becoming very difficult for teacher to buy a house. Yeah. So I don't know if the city can do anything about
it.
It's just regular income.
That's a good comment. I think that's a valid comment. Even just those concerns about maybe millennials being able to afford a house. Yeah, in the city of Madison.
Unless you work at Apple. It's crazy. Rents in the city are outrageous. I don't know how some people.
And if it's driven up by Epic, which is what everybody says, it's driven up by Epic, then the city, Epic has made it impossible.
So we've got a couple people over here that have different feelings. How do you guys feel about the city's ability to be able to have an impact?
Well, I'm not an economist, but my sense is that when something has a high price, one way to bring down that price is to increase the supply and just make more of it. And you can bring down the price. And things the city can do, we've been talking about Westgate Mall and how Hy-Vee is looking at two-thirds of that property and saying, we need a change. And they're deciding, do they want to make it a subtle tweak? Do they want to make a radical change, or what exactly is that going to look like? I think if they were to go in there and say, what if we had something like what we have here, where you have retail locations and then housing on top, and you just piggyback it, just put more housing in. And if you just keep adding housing,
regardless of the price point, I mean, when the supply goes up. And to me, it sounds like the city is borrowing at 1.5%. I don't know what a retail business like IB could borrow at, but it seems like if you want to build, this is a great time to build something because you can borrow at low rates. And I think maybe this is like a historical low on rates that we're not going to see 5 or 10 years from now. So I would say all the stars are aligning for a good time to say, well, if we want more affordable housing, let's just make more housing and pick that one up.
But they'll just make more expensive housing.
Yeah. But then doesn't that, I mean...
And that'll make some of the older housing go down because this will be newer and we'll be able to...
Go down in price?
Yeah, the older ones will get stuck going down because there'll be newer, nicer stuff that everybody will gravitate to.
Wouldn't that make that more affordable? Like, wouldn't that make those, again, if we're looking for more affordable housing, if we take sort of a 50-year-old single-family home here in the Hyatt or Westmoreland, and suddenly the mortgage cost on it drops from...
Yeah, but for a lot of kids coming out of college and young people, their salaries aren't that high, so that they can even afford to live in an apartment in this city. I mean, we know that.
Our house over here, we bought it for $60,000 25 years ago. They're selling houses for $300,000 across the street. They're no bigger than ours. And I should be happy because that makes my house valuable. But I'm saying nobody,
nobody should have to.
Yeah. You're paying exorbitant amount of money. The realtors are making exorbitant amount of money. And, you know, you can't even move into the old established neighborhood. Partly because of the school desirability, which is great, but it's really hard for a young person.
Meanwhile, just to add a complexity to this, meanwhile, the increased value of housing and property in general, that's pretty essential to what Dave was describing earlier with the levy limits, right? If we're not seeing an increased value in our property, then it makes it ever harder to capture sufficient tax funds to do our work. So it's super complicated. I mean, that doesn't change that is reality. But
along those lines, though, if our houses are increasing in value and we've got that going for us for the levy purposes, then our taxes, our property taxes, are you know, enough to make you move out of the neighborhood, you know, to.
That's what I was sort of leading toward. I'm really glad that you made that point, right? So, I mean, that's a major thing.
It's a double-edged sword there.
Every year, the city makes a determination about what the property taxes are going to be. So that's a very significant thing that we do for homeowners and renters alike. We make that decision, et cetera.
I have children growing up in this town, too, and I moved a little bit to the left when you asked about how hopeful they were. I was about I don't know where they're
going
to live.
Most of my son's friends, he's 28, are in Minneapolis. They've gone to Minneapolis where they can get better paying jobs. There's larger corporations there, and they can afford it. Houses and things like that. But that's their choice.
That's
I'm saying very few of his friends that he went to college or high school with at West and all that still live in Minneapolis.
This is a great discussion.
Thank you all. The concluding part of this joint listening session will be broadcast next Sunday night at 10 p.m.